Good morning. It's Tuesday, February 21st, 2012. Those of you that were tuned in yesterday, I know you're looking forward to part two of today's testimony by Jeremy Lynn. I can't wait to share this God-honoring, transformational message for two reasons, to bless and encourage you. Maybe that's two reasons right there. But a third reason, maybe, is just to have you praying for this young man as he testifies to God's goodness through basketball. As it says in Colossians 3:23, whatever you do, work at it with all your heart as working for the Lord and not for men. And it seems like Jeremy Lynn is turning his basketball experience into serving the Lord. And I think when you hear this powerful transformational story, you'll see quite possibly how God will be using him to not only influence his teammates and those around him, but people throughout America, millions in China, and the world now, as everyone is getting caught up with, as the sports announcers say, Linsanity. So to get you primed for today's testimony, here's ESPN sports commentators, including well-known Irvin Williams, Magic Johnson, as they talk about Jeremy Lynn, as recorded over a week ago, and Linsanity has even gotten greater since, with more news stories, headlines that are captivating basketball and sports enthusiasts, along with people throughout the world and millions in China. Here's ESPN Sports.
Live from downtown Los Angeles, welcome to our studios for the Jeremy Lynn Toyota Halftime Show. Right now, let's take a look at what the fans are talking about in the Toyota NBA Sports Nation. What do you think they're talking about? They're talking about Jeremy Lynn. Let's take a look at his first half. 18 points, 5 assists, 7 for 12 shooting, hitting the jumper, which, let's face it, we didn't think he could because he hadn't. I mean, he is getting past people on the pick and roll, going to the basket, picking up a steal here. He didn't throw it down because the garden might have just, the roof might have blown off.
Yes. He didn't throw it to his open teammate either.
But this is the shot right here. Oh, trickery. Oh, spin. Trickery.
Little Steve Nash Jr.
I love that.
Jr. perhaps.
Plays like Steve Nash and John Stockton. He has a great stop-and-go move, and he's always surveying the floor. This guy is for real, Michael, for real. I like his game, and he got that garden buzzing right now. With that 360 move,
right after that move,
man, that was
Kobe Bryant went over to guard him, and I think we're going to see Kobe Bryant guard him in the second half.
Yeah, and what you see is Lynn, even though he's got 18 points, he's making everybody better. Yeah. Jared Jeffries, nine. When's the last time Jared Jeffries had 9 points in a half?
That's right.
I mean, and I'm not even trying to be funny.
That's off point guard.
And Steve Novak has 9 points, 2 threes. He's averaged 19 points the last two games, so everybody's getting
involved. Real quick, they like to play with him because he'll get them the ball when they're open.
All kinds of good news coming out of Jeremy Lin land. Harvard beat Penn tonight in the Palestra. We cannot get enough of Jeremy Lin and Jeremy Lin Central. Remember, let your voice be heard.
All right, that's what people are talking about in the Toyota NBA Sports Nation. All right. How surprised are each of you on a scale of 1 to 10, honestly, at the way Jeremy Lin played? I'm going to admit, I thought he'd play fine. I thought he had one of those 20-point, 4-assist games.
You did expect 20.
Okay, 20, but he scored 38. On a 1 to 10 scale, I'm an 8 plus. It's sort of the shock meter of how Jeremy Lin played against Kobe Bryant in the Lakers.
8 plus is all?
8.
I'm going probably 18? 20.
Yeah, I mean,
and not that he's playing well. For him to put a team on his back and now create excitement, create guys playing harder, better defense, getting out on the break, filling the wings, because they know this young man, Jeremy Lin, would get them the ball. And I tell you what, New York, and now the country, after watching it on ESPN, sees what we're seeing. This guy is for real. This is not no flash in the pan. This guy can really play basketball. And, Chris, he's smart, man. He's a smart basketball player.
And you know what this shows, too, is that he can handle the expectations.
Yeah.
We've seen a lot of guys, when nobody's expecting anything, nobody knows who you are, you come in, you get 25. But after the first three games, he had everybody's talking about Jeremy Lin. The Garden is full of Jeremy Lin t-shirts. He's on the front page, the back page of the tabloids in New York. And you've got Kobe Bryant coming into your building. And you step up on that stage and you deliver the 38-7. I mean...
Well, that was some colorful ESPN commentators talking about Jeremy Lin. But now I'll rewind a little of yesterday's testimony and pick up where he's sharing about writing in his diary and seeing God's fingerprints all over his life. Here's Jeremy Lin.
December 29th, 2010. I keep a diary. I know that's kind of girly, but I occasionally write in my diary.
Aww.
I wrote, "This is probably the closest to depression I've been. I lack confidence on the court. I'm not having fun playing basketball anymore. I hate being in the D-League, and I want to rejoin the Warriors. I feel embarrassed and like a failure." Then on January 21st, 2011, I wrote in my diary, I wish I had never signed with the Warriors. And so at that time, I know a lot of you guys are looking at me like I'm crazy, but that's really the amount of pressure and the amount of stress that I put on myself to the point where I really lost my joy, my passion, and my purpose in basketball. And I remember at that time, none of the paychecks, the car, the fame, none of the NBA lifestyle, none of that stuff, my dream job, my dream life, none of that meant anything to me anymore. Because I was in a really tough situation. Basketball had consumed my time, it consumed my energy, it consumed all my thoughts, it consumed my happiness. My happiness was dependent on how well I played. If I didn't play well, I wasn't happy. And at that point, I started to realize, this is becoming an idol for me. It's becoming everything. It's becoming so important. It's my number one priority in my life. And so that's when I realized I need to start trusting in God more. And I always had the head knowledge of knowing that, but it was tougher to implement it into my life. And so that's when I started to realize I need to trust God more. And for those of you guys who really know my story top to bottom, you would understand that for me to not trust God is crazy, because His fingerprints are all over my story from top to bottom. I'm going to read you guys a list of things that had to happen for me to get into the NBA, and none of these things have anything to do with me or anything to do with me controlling the situation. My dad moved to America in 1977, turned on the TV, and fell in love with basketball. I was born into a family where basketball was just part of my life. I was, 5 years old playing basketball. I got the genes that allowed me to be 6'3", 200 pounds. Both of my parents are 5'6". They both weigh about 110 pounds. My brothers both weigh about 130 to 140 pounds. How did I become 6'3", 200 pounds? That's not something that I can control. I got the genes to be the most competitive person in the family. I was notorious for throwing controllers when I lost in video games growing up, but that turned out to be a blessing. I'm not encouraging you guys to throw controllers. I grew up with two brothers who both love basketball and pushed me really hard. I found an AAU coach and a high school coach who both fell in love with my game, fell in love with how I played, and really took me under their wing to develop me. This is huge, because both my brothers never had that opportunity. They never had a coach who really took them under their wing and just became kind of their mentor and their best friend for 6 years. I broke my ankle my junior year, which turned out to be a turning point in my life, because that's when I started to realize I need to stop taking everything for granted. And then coming out of high school, I was recruited by Harvard and Brown. I was dying to go to Stanford. God closed that door, thankfully, to me. And as a result, I went to Harvard. If I had gone to Stanford, I can promise you I would not have been able to make it to the NBA, because I would have developed as a player. I wouldn't have been able to play as much early on. And so it was huge for me to go to a smaller school and develop. After my freshman year at Harvard, they hired Coach Amaker, who completely transformed the entire program. Harvard basketball has never had a coach like Coach Amaker, and for it to happen during my sophomore year was, again, something I couldn't control. I was able to find a Christian agent who loves God, believes in me, and was able to give me spiritual advice as I struggled throughout the season. On draft night, Donnie Nelson, who's the general manager of the Dallas Mavericks, who are about to win the NBA championship.
Yeah!
I did not root for them, because I could have had a ring if I had signed with them. So, don't get me twisted, but he called me right before the draft was over, and he said, I want to offer you a spot on my summer league team. That was the only team that had offered me a spot on the summer league team. If that had never happened, I would never have had a chance. I got hurt during my pre-draft workouts. I hurt my Achilles. And literally the morning of the start of summer league, I was cleared to play. That morning that training camp started, I was cleared to play and I was healthy enough to play. Summer league went on. We played five games. There's 30 teams in the NBA. We played five games. We played five teams. One of them happened to be the Washington Wizards.
John Wall had
the number one pick in the draft.
John Wall.
That game, Roddy Dubois, who was the starting point guard, hurt his ankle. That's something I couldn't control. As a result, I got more minutes. And then it happened. I have to play my best quarter of basketball in the fourth quarter of that game. And that's my path to the NBA. And if you look back at each of those things, you would understand that's not something that I can directly control. I can't directly say, I'm going to be the most competitive, or I'm going to be the tallest, or I'm going to weigh the most, or I'm going to find this coach. All these people, all these things came into my life, and they are all blessings from God. And as I look back, I realize these are his people. So back to my first year while I was in the D-League, even though things weren't going well, I found a way to kind of lose hope, lose trust in God. And, you know, I try to remind myself of my story and how I got there, but the way I live my life is very, very well put by this verse. 1 Corinthians 9:24 to 25. Do you not know that in a race all the runners run, but only one receives the prize? So run that you may obtain. Every athlete exercises self-control in all things. They do it to receive a perishable wreath. The prize that I was playing for at that time was a perishable wreath. I was playing for great games, great stats, getting recalled to the Warriors, making it past the trade deadline, getting the next year of my contract, living up to everyone's expectations. I was playing for those things. I was playing for myself. I was playing for my glory. And I remember I was had a phone conversation with a pastor that I was pretty close with, and he said, you know, when you go to the D-League, this could be a great opportunity for you. I want you to spend an hour every day with God. I said, what? He was like, I want you to spend an hour every day with God. I was like, wow, I have never done that, but I've decided that's something I need to do. And so as I was there, I came across Philippians 3:14. It says, I press on toward the goal for the prize of the upward call of God in Christ Jesus. So this verse talks about an upward prize, a heavenly prize. And this prize is blessings and rewards that we get when we get to heaven. It's the eternal fellowship that we can have with Jesus Christ. And so our true prize, our true reward, what we're striving for, what I would learn I needed to strive for, was something in heaven and not on earth. And so I read this book called Don't Waste Your Life by John Piper. I don't know if you guys have read it, but he says, God created us to live with a single passion, to joyfully display his supreme excellence in all spheres of life. When Paul wrote in Philippians to press on for an upward prize, what he was saying, what he was doing was living for that, and that made his life meaningful. And I realized I had to learn to do the same. I had to learn to stop chasing the perishable prizes of this earth. I had to stop chasing personal glory. I had to learn how to give my best effort unto God and just trust him with the results. I had to learn to have enough faith to trust in his grace, to trust in his sovereign and perfect plan. I had to submit my will. I had to submit my desires. I had to submit my dreams. I had to give it all up to God and just say, look, I'm going to give my best effort. I'm going to go out on the court. I'm going to play every day for you, and I'm going to let you take care of the rest. And this is something that I still struggle with every day to this day. Even before getting up here, I was telling my cousin Alan, I was like, dude, I'm kind of nervous. And he's like, dude, just give it up to God. And so that's something that I still struggle with every day.
In case you just tuned in, you're listening to Mark and Friends, airing part two of Jeremy Lin's testimony, as recorded as he shared some of his life story at the Chinese Church of Christ. If you missed yesterday's or a portion of today's broadcast, you can find it archived at greatnewsradio.org. That's greatnewsradio.org under the Archive Programs link. Back to the testimony with Jeremy Lin, starting point guard of the New York Knicks.
As the season went on, I got sent down and recalled three times to the D-League. After the third time, I got up to the Warriors and we played the Grizzlies. And I remember I had like 8 points in 10 minutes or something like that. And I was like really happy. I was like, oh, this is like all worth it. This is what I was working for. And I remember that was the first end of a back-to-back. We had a game the next night. And the next day I was like, oh, that's not that cool because we're going to play the Rockets tonight. And if I still think about the Grizzlies, I'm going to go out there and Aaron Brooks is going to score 20 on me. And so my point is, playing for, you know, great stats and everything is nice, but that satisfaction, that happiness is only from game to game. It's very temporary. And so my example of that is LeBron James. I mean, this guy is one of the best players to ever play the game. He has a couple bad games in the finals, and all of a sudden, everyone's talking about how he's quitting and how he hasn't showed up. And if I live like that, if I play for that, if I play for what other people say about me, if I play for the expectations of others, then my happiness is going to fluctuate with how I play in the games. And so I'm here to tell you, you know, I have what many of you guys look at me and you say, oh, he has a perfect life, he has a dream life, he has a dream job. He gets to play in the NBA, he gets to play basketball for a living, you know, everything associated with the NBA lifestyle. But what I'm here to tell you is that that stuff brings temporary happiness, but it doesn't bring eternal joy. I remember I was on, we take a private plane from city to city for every game. I remember when I first got on that plane, there was M&M's, Skittles, Starbursts, burgers, chicken wings, pizza. Wow, I remember I ate everything the plane had to offer. All my teammates were looking at me and they're like, why are you eating so much? I'm like, why aren't you eating so much? You know, and they're like, were you a starving kid growing up? You never had food? I was like, no, but this is a private plane. Like, this is awesome. And then I remember towards the end of the season, we got on this one plane, and normally right by everyone's chair, there's a little power outlet. So you can plug in your phone charger, your computer charger. And I remember I looked down, and I was like, dude, there's no power outlet here. And then my teammates started to realize that. And then we started to complain. We're like, man, this plane is horrible. Where's the power outlet? And then I remember at that point, I had to stop myself because I was like, dude, are you serious? Like, that's what you're going to complain about is not having a power outlet on a private plane going to your next game. And that's what happiness is like for me. It's really cool, but it fades. It doesn't last. And those things, playing in the NBA, all those things are obviously fun, and I love it, and I love my life. But that's not going to give me joy for the rest of my life. It's not going to give me purpose for the rest of my life. And so, you know, that's basically what I wanted to share with you guys. And my application to you guys is, what does that mean for you? If you're a non-believer, my challenge for you is to really think about what you're living for. What is your prize? Are you playing for a perishable wreath, or are you playing for a heavenly prize? What do you think about most every day when you wake up? It could be SATs, college, it could be money, a good job, a promotion, cars, video games, it could be pornography, it could be girls. If you're a girl, it could be attention, it could be beauty, it could be all these different things. I don't know what everyone pursues, but you have to take a look at yourself and really ask yourself, what is my prize? What am I living life for? And hopefully my story can be an encouragement to you, and my advice isn't for you guys to all just convert right away. My only encouragement to you guys is just to get to know God. Try to get to know God. I don't care if that's opening your Bible, reading a chapter a day. It could be talking to a Christian friend who's been trying to evangelize for you for a while. It could be talking to a pastor. It could be attending church. It could be any of those things. But my encouragement is that you wouldn't leave, or you wouldn't go through this next week without at least doing one thing to try to get to know God a little bit more, to try to understand that He has salvation waiting for you. He has purpose in life waiting for you. He has eternal joy, eternal peace waiting for you. And if you're a believer, I'd ask you the same question. What is your prize? What are you living for? How can you play the game of life for the heavenly prize? And the first thing for me when I ask myself that question is I need to realize God has to be my number one priority. If He's not my number one priority, I have an idol in my life. And so for me, I don't know how much time you guys spend with God, but if you don't spend any time with Him daily, try to spend 10 minutes with Him. If you spend 10 minutes, try to get 15. You do 15, try to do 30. You know, just start evangelizing to a non-believing friend that you've had your whole life that you've never really mustered up the courage to share the gospel with. Give your best effort in school, in your job. job or whatever you're doing and let God control the results. I remember when I was a freshman in college, freshman in high school, it was a similar thing. I couldn't sleep because I was so worried about my grades. I was like, I have to get straight A's. I never got straight A's once in high school, but I thought I could and I would worry about it. And it just made me miserable because I just had to realize I need to give my best effort and let God take care of the rest. And, you know, for me, He did, and He showed me a different path, and that's what He can do for you. I would also encourage you guys to forgive those who wronged you. Put others above yourself. Even if you don't make a lot of money, you don't make any at all, maybe consider tithing or offering or donating to a good charity or a Christian organization. I think one of the biggest things that I learned and really struggled with is to show the people around me that I love them, because one of the best things about being a Christian is that you show love and you are a light to people around you. And so for me, I remember one day I was like, I'm going to tell my mom and my dad that I love them. And I don't know if that sounds weird to you guys, but for me, I was like sweating thinking about it. I was like, oh my gosh, I don't know what they're going to say. So, I was like, hey, mom. She's like, what? I love you. And she's like, oh, like, I love you too. And for me, I had never told my mom I loved her. And it was really hard for me. And I told my little brother the same thing the other day, and he laughed at me. But at least he knows that I love him. And so I just encourage you guys, if you're a believer, just to spend time with God and to really go out of your way to show people that you love them, even the people that you have a hard time loving. And so I hope you guys enjoyed it, and I'm just thankful that I was able to share my testimony with you.
That was Jeremy Lin, starting point guard of the New York Knicks. Don't you just love his transparency, his style of sharing, his heart for God, and his love for people? What are you living for? What is your prize? What do you think most about? As Jeremy shared, get to know God or get to know Him better. Realize and make God your number one priority. Forgive as God has forgiven you, and love those around you and tell them so. Be praying for Jeremy, as I trust as he continues to draw strength from God, he'll be a testimony to millions. And remember, God wants to work in and through you today, so draw strength from Him. Thanks for listening, everyone. Thanks for being a part of this radio listening family. This is Mark Burns with the Ministry of Great News Radio. God bless you, and have a great day and night.